In the last two classes, we've talked about God. We've looked at least 20 of his characteristics, 20 of his qualities to describe his power, his ability to help. And now, as we take that information, we want to build on it to show how we can help in some specific circumstances. The lesson title tonight is When I Walk Through the Valley of the Shadow of Death. So it is a theme when we go through some difficult times, the God who has the characteristics, the power, the attributes that we've previously discussed, let's see how he can help during those hard times. He mentions one's walk with God may take him to different levels and bring him face to face with varying circumstances. And that's right. When we think about the Christian walk, you might even use the word faith here, you're going to see that people are going to come to different levels. They're going to come to different levels when it comes to the good times and bad times. You're also, I think, going to find people that as they go through their life, they're going to have different levels when it comes to faith. When things are going well, easy to have strong faith? No problem then. But when things seem like they're falling apart, then faith, it begins to separate, as the old saying goes, the men from the boys. So when you think about faith, you could have a whole lesson on faith. In fact, I've seen on at least one occasion, somebody is almost like a chart sermon with a barometer or a thermometer. A thermometer would be better. They talked about a weak faith, a temporary faith, a working and active faith, a strong faith, a great faith, an unfeigned faith, and it just kept going, just as you might find that thermometer going higher and higher. Such was also true here. But we are going to have varying levels of faith sometimes, depending on some circumstances, and also a lot of different up and down times in the Christian life. When times are good, during the victorious moments, one may feel as though he were on a high mountain, looking down at all the beauties of the world below. Some people have that feeling a lot more often than others. And it would be nice if we were always on top of the mountain, but that's not the way it always works. Sometimes you're down there in the valley. And just by the nature of life, there are going to be some people that are more mountain people than the valley folks and vice versa. And people may have that in part because of genetics, but again, it's going to be switched up for all of us at one time or another. He talked about the psalmist, thinking about Psalm 23. He certainly had those great moments, no doubt, but he couldn't stay on the mountain all the time. He had to come down to the valley, he knew it, but he was determined to walk by faith, for he said, yea, though I, he personalizes, and though I walk, that is, I'm going to spend some time there, it's not going to be necessarily a quick trip, I'm going to go through the valley. And it's not going to be a pleasant valley. He says it's the valley of the shadow of death. And yet, his attitude was that even though I'm going to go through this difficult, this hard, this very painful time, what did he say? I'm not going to fear. I'm going to deal with that. I'm going to recognize that. I'm going to overcome that. And then there's the reason. He says, for God, you are with me. And you're going to comfort me. Your rod and your staff will be there. Psalm 23, verse 4. Then this question, is it not wonderful that God does not let circumstances change his attitude towards us? That's good news. Might our attitude be changed based on our circumstances? Yes, a lot of people do that when it comes to God. But God's attitude is not going to change towards us whether things are going well or things are not going to go well. He's with us in a joy, sorrow, and sickness, health, in our highs and in our lows. While the mountains, the next section here, while the mountains in our lives represent victory and joy, the valleys may represent, he says, trials, dangers, fears, loneliness, pain, and even death. What we're talking about tonight, do you think it's true not only on an individual level, but on a national level? Nationally, we can go through highs and lows? Yeah. Sure. What would some of the highs be in our nation? Or a nation? Doesn't have to be ours. All right, you've got peace. People are thinking we've been at war for several years, and it's been very traumatic. Lives have been lost, but finally peace has come. And that's going to be a high point. What was the second answer? All right, independence. We've been under bondage to this nation, or maybe to multiple nations for a period of time. We're no longer having to pay fees to them. We're no longer subject to the laws and so forth. So again, it's a great time to celebrate our independence. What else? All right, you think about the depression in this country. People, where are we going to get our next loaf of bread, if we can find bread, and what are we going to do for a job? Day-to-day living was very, very difficult. You get past the depression, better economic times come, and people feel like things are really finally looking up. What else?
Financial
nationally. What about a plague? Disease becomes rampant in a nation. People are sick, people are dying, maybe there is no known cure, maybe medicine is not readily available, and all of a sudden the government comes out and says we're able to treat everybody, we can vaccinate everybody, no one has to deal with this kind of thing any longer. So we also see peaks and valleys when it comes to nations. We, like the psalmist, must be ready for these times. Should be true on a national level as well. And indeed we shall be ready for them if we can say like the psalmist said, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. The people of God in the Old Testament, and we also see about this in the New Testament, but the Old certainly a great example, he says he frequently found themselves facing death or situations which might easily lead to death. Now there are a number of reasons for that. Some of that was self-inflicted. When you look at some of the high-profile individuals, kings specifically, they sometimes made some bad choices and that allowed them to go through some very difficult periods. You look at the northern kings, and I mean, they just, you know, made a lot of bad decisions and suffered for it, both individually as well as nationally. But you also, I think, find with this point, you've got all this stuff in the Old Testament. God's people, again and again, they frequently suffered bad things. You think there's a reason God might have recorded that for us? I mean, you would think after the first dozen or two dozen times, I mean, we got it. But it's just there again and again and again. Why might God have done that? All right, I think that's going to be one of the points that we'd have to. You try it on your own. God says it's not going to work. It's not in man to, man can't direct his own steps, as Jeremiah made the point. What else? All right, I think that's going to be another practical lesson. People are supposed to learn from their mistakes. Paul, Romans 15:4, talked about learning from the Old Testament examples.
I was just going to say, we're always going to have the ups and downs in our lives, and I think you just forewarned us that it's going to happen.
It is. This was not something for just this group or this particular time period. This is going to be a normal part of life. And I do think that that's probably a major reason why that happened, that God says, look, if you're going to live even under the New Testament, I'm going to be with you. I've got plenty of power. But as you go through your life, these are going to be some of the things that you face. And there are literally just dozens and dozens, hundreds of examples to help us with that. So it's good to go back and look at those examples, especially when we're focused on this kind of material. He talks about people sometimes, they face death. A difficult time for most people. Or situations which could have easily led to death. He goes back to the book of Judges. Judges chapter 6, verse 2. And then we'll take a look at 1 Samuel 21 and then 1 Kings chapter 19. Has anybody headed back to the book of Judges and can read for us? Some of these readings will expand, but that will not be true for this one. Judges 6:2. Anybody want to take care of that? All right, Sherman.
In the hand of Midian overpowered Israel, and because of Midian, the people of Israel made for themselves the dens that are in the mountains and the caves and the strongholds.
Okay, let's fill in a blank. Israel, they were greatly prevailed upon by the Midianites. That is, the Midianites had the upper hand. And there was a reason for that. As you go back to Judges chapter 6, verse 1, this was one of the times when the Israelites were not living according to the way that God wanted them. So God, you know, used the Midianites to punish them. And the Israelites had to make what? In the mountains? Dens, had to hide out. I mean, these were God's people, but they'd messed up. And where else were they having to hide in there, having to hide in caves and also strongholds? If you were to read verses 3 and 4 and 5 and 6, you'd find that God did some other things to his people because of sin. As you look at verses 3 and 4, which again, we're not going to read, but God said, they're going to come in and they're going to take the food. You're going to basically have the land stripped. And the people were crying out for help. It really got bad. They were going through that valley of the shadow of death. Once again, that was a self-imposed problem. There wasn't the need for that, but God says you're going to have to suffer this because you've made some very, very bad choices. God had the power to deliver them and the willingness if they were willing to repent. All right, then we have our second passage. That's 1 Samuel chapter 22, verse 1. Anybody turned over there and have it ready? Lois, thank you.
Okay,
sometimes think about great people not having, or potentially great people not having too many issues, but that was certainly not true for some of the people in the Old Testament. Here David has to spend some time where? In the cave of Adullam. All right, and then we've got our third reference here, 1 Kings chapter 19. He has verses 3 and 9. I'd also like verses 10 and 14 read. 1 Kings chapter 3, or 19, verses 3, 9, 10, and 14. Right.
And when he saw that, he arose and went for his life, and came to Beersheba, which belonged to Judah, and left his servant there, and came thither to a cave, and lodged there. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, and he said unto him, What doest thou here, Elijah? And he said, I have been very jealous for the house, for the Lord of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thine altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword, and I, even I only, am left. And they seek my life to take it away. Who's the last verse?
And then 10 and 14 too.
And he said, I have been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts, because the children of Israel have forsaken the covenant, thrown down thine altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword, and I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away.
Okay, so Elijah comes back to that same sentiment basically twice. And as you look at the context of it, the writer correctly mentions that you've got Jezebel aware of Elijah's opposition to the false prophets of Baal. They're killed, and she's not happy with it. She'd been feeding them. She'd been supporting them. So she sends a message that, hey, buddy, guess what? By tomorrow, what's going to be your status? You're going to be dead. You know, I'm going to make sure, you know, I'm the queen, and I'm going to make sure that you are destroyed. Well, you would think that for a servant of God, you know, you'd hopefully have some faith in God. But you hear that from a human source, from a human power, in this case, king's wife, and Elijah. And again, I think this goes back to what Doug was talking about, one of his points just a few minutes ago. A very human frailty. He arose, he's fleeing for his life, eventually comes to a cave. Does he believe that God exists? Yeah. Does he have communication with God?
Yes.
It's almost like, well, God, you know, I've been jealous, I've been on your side, and now where am I? All right, I'm at death's door. Things are not looking very good. You almost see there, I think, an implication that he didn't think God could save him, that God could deliver him. So, again, those qualities about God that we talked about in the last 2 weeks, very, very important, and they're relevant to us because when we get to these difficult times, the low times, we've got to remember that God can, if he so wills, choose to live, to deliver us from those times, and if that's not his will, he can see us safely through those times. But when you're in the spot, those times can be difficult to remember. Anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up with the next thought? Okay. Picking up with a New Testament reference, Matthew chapter 10, verse 28, and then we'll also take a look at Matthew or Acts chapter 12. Well, let's make it Acts 23, 12 to 15. Acts 23, 12 to 15. Who wants to take our Matthew 10, 28 reference? Steve? And then our Acts 23, 12 to 15 passage. Acts 23, Betty, verses 12 to 15. Jesus encouraged his disciples to be prepared for death, as we see from Matthew 10. Let's have the 28th verse read.
Do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell.
Okay, let's fill in our blank. Jesus said, do not fear. Do not be afraid of them that kill the body, but they're not able, they don't have the power to kill the soul. Who would that describe? The one who can kill the body, but can't kill the soul.
Man.
All right, man. You might think in this case, going back to the story about Jezebel, king, queen, president, emperor, maybe some kind of governing body, maybe military force, they can kill the body, but they can't kill the eternal spirit. Jesus said, if you're going to fear someone, if you're going to be concerned about someone, it's not that human authority. He says you fear, you be concerned about the one who can destroy the soul and body, your body and soul, where? In hell. And who's that going to be? All right. So when we think about this, it has a lot of application. One of the ladies, I have never met her. I came into contact with her because I made a request of a preacher who held a meeting a couple hours south of here about 3 weeks ago. Went down for the meeting and talked to him, and he thought this lady might be interested in writing some articles for a Christian Woman blog. She sent me two. Her name's Kitty, if you've seen those articles. I don't know how old she is. I'm guessing she's probably not much beyond 30, maybe 32, 33, something like that. And in the second article she sent me, which I published both, but I sent her a note back. And I said, it's good material, but I want you to know this. That first article that you sent, it was liked by a lot of people. There were 150 people that signed on and they said they really liked your material. However, I'm going to publish your second article as well, and I really like it. But your second article has some information about how to become a Christian. And we've got about 10,000 people a day that access that material. I'm guessing that most of them are not all that committed to the New Testament as far as following it in its entirety. They've got some belief in it. And if they see that statement, there are going to be some people that may not respond very well. When we put out doctrinal information, sometimes people unsubscribe. That's just the nature of it. Sometimes we get some comments that are not exactly favorable. That's also the nature of putting some things out on the web. But I told her, I said, I'm telling you this in advance. And she sent me a note back. She said, do you want me to rework it? I said, no. I am just kind of giving you a heads up that if we put this material out, there might be some people who say some things that might injure your feelings. And I thought it was interesting in her reply. She said, well, I'm trying to become more courageous. I'm trying to get to a point where I'm willing to be bolder in my faith. And I said, well, I'm not trying to discourage you. I'm just trying to help you. I'm just trying to prepare you for the fact that some people may not like that, but it's still the right thing to do. And that's what I'm going to do. And we don't want that every day because we probably wouldn't have any subscribers left. But, there are some wives, they think that their husbands need some wheat germ or some other healthy stuff, so they don't tell their husbands, and they work it in sometimes with the food. I'm not going to ask if any wives do that here. But, there have been wives over the years that have done that kind of thing. And, when it comes to religious teaching, you can do that same kind of thing. This is good for you. You might not need it or get it every time, but we're going to work it in. And that's the idea here. And I think that's true for a lot of people. If they're just put on the spot all the time, they're not going to do very well. But there needs to be that encouragement, that reminder that God can help them. And, little by little, they're built up, they're encouraged to stand for what's right, so that we don't fear those that can kill the body but not the soul, but rather we stand up for what's right because we fear, we respect, we look up to, and want to do what's right when it comes to God, because He can destroy both soul and body in hell. Anything you want to add or ask on that point? All right. He talks about in Acts chapter 12, Herod, the death of James, the brother of John, with the sword. And then we also have some information about Paul. There were some fellows who were after him. Acts 23, verses 12 through 15. Let's fill in our blanks and we'll make an additional comment or two. There were more than 40 people who said that they would not eat or drink till they killed Paul. If you know that you had 40 people after you, might concern you a little bit? I mean, just one will terrify people. Sometimes just hearing someone make a threat will really upset people. But once again, we go back to what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 28. Do not fear the people that can destroy the body, but not the soul. Rather, you fear Him. The one that you only need to be concerned about is God, because He can destroy both soul and body in hell. And that's just one of those fundamental, that's one of those basic New Testament teachings that we need to get in our heads. And when times come up where it's tempting to not stand for God or to go in some other way, we say, this is what the Lord said, this is right, and this is going to govern my behavior. Additional thoughts before we pick up with the next page and Acts 9, 22-25.
They make those promises just hold them accountable when they did get old. You've got about 3, maybe 4 days, and not 3 before you're dead.
Yeah.
So did they hold them accountable? I always wondered that when I read that. I thought, well, I wonder if these guys were ever held accountable for saying something like that. How much more power that gives to God that he didn't allow them to kill them?
Yeah. When you deal with bad guys like that, a lot of times those promises sort of, and whether or not that happened on this occasion, we don't know, but a lot of times those promises just get pushed aside because the agenda is kill the guy. So if you make an idol threat here and it doesn't work, excuse it, somehow overlook it, because still the mission is out there and you still got to accomplish that. So I would be inclined, just based on human nature, to think that that got shoved aside and let's go to plan B now. And see, because we're still interested in trying to destroy him.
It's kind of interesting, though, that, of course, these days everybody wants to sue everybody. Everybody gets every little bit of information they can to make sure they have a good story or, you know, something to back up what they believe. It seems like there they were kind of let a lot of things slide. He wouldn't really push it, probably because they were afraid of the Jewish sect. The possibility, I would presume, is that they were afraid of those that were in charge of the temples at that time.
Yeah.
They would kill them.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else? Acts 9, starting with verse 22 and reading down through 25. Anybody have it? Catherine? Acts 9, 22 to 25. Okay, let's sum up what took place and then break it down in a couple of additional ways. Let's start out by telling how Saul escaped. What are the basic details that she just read? All right, there's a big basket, there's a wall, he's able to be put in the basket, and he's able to be lowered over the wall. When you think about that, he also learned of the plot. That's another key detail that you see, I think, from verse 24.
I was thinking when I read that about Rahab let the spies down the wall, or part of them.
Yeah. When you look at, whether you're back at Rahab or over here in Acts chapter 9, it reminds me a little bit of Isaiah. He said, God's thoughts are not our thoughts, his ways are not our ways. And yet, I suspect, again, you don't know all the time what may be going through the minds of people, but I think one of the greatest difficulties that man has is understanding the way that God works. Because if it really is so far, so high, so beyond our comprehension, I mean, the only thing that we can do is work really within our frame of reference, unless we're just trying to engage in wild speculation. But when you look at God, you know, throughout the Bible, you think about Rahab. You know, you're going to deliver your people, you're going to help your people with a harlot. And, you know, we had, when we... the other day we had some people here, Brian had an activity, and we talked about the story of Gideon. You know, you're going to reduce your army, and this is going to be the way that, you know, you attack your people. This is going to be the way that you deliver your people from Egyptian bondage. I mean, this is going to be the way that you bring your son into the world. In this particular case, you've got, I'm going to help you learn about the plot. Well, okay, I mean, that's all good and fine, but we need to figure out some way to deliver you. We're going to go, and we're going to work at night. Well, okay, that kind of makes sense. But God says, I'm going to deliver you through a basket. We're going to work through the wall. Well, that's kind of an odd way to do it. It's almost, I don't know, it's almost in some ways like God chooses ways that are odd, strange, bizarre. When you look at some of the things that his prophets did, again, just very, very out of the ordinary. And I guess when I think about that, it's almost like God, when it comes to having faith in him, the qualities that we talked about before, if he were operating in a way that we would think of as typical, as not unexpected, it would be, well, okay, you know, this is just the way it's going to go. But it's almost like God kind of strikes out of nowhere sometimes when it comes to fulfilling his will. You just see, Abraham looking for a wife for Isaac. How that was, put together. Just a very, very unusual God. So when you see how he's delivered his people, strange circumstances oftentimes accompany that. And today, he operates by that strange people, that strange way, that strange principle sometimes, to the point where people say God works in mysterious ways. Well, I think there's a lot of truth in that. Additional thoughts before we pick up with the next passage. Okay, Philippians 4, verses 11 through 13. This will kind of tie in with what I was talking about just a moment ago. Philippians 4, 11 to 13. Somebody have that and willing to read it? Philippians 4, Catherine, 11 to 13. Okay, we got that. Okay. Did you get through 13?
Yes.
Okay. I had my mind there on something else for just a second, but thank you. Okay, Paul said, not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therein to be content. He said, I know how to be abased. I know how to abound. And then he said, and we'll come back to this word. He says, I am instructed, key word, both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need, and through Christ I can do all things. Now the word that is translated instructed, King James, is an interesting word. Outside the New Testament it was used, it was sometimes associated with the idea of a mystery religion. There are some rumors that some connected people, former presidents and those kinds of things, were involved with secret societies. The Masons are not quite as secret as they once were. But there are some other secret societies, and if you were to become involved in one of those, they'd probably have their secret rituals. There is this special knowledge that you would have if you're going to be part of the group. Well, that's kind of the idea there, and it's not in a mystical sense, it's not in a false religion sense, but when Paul says, I've been instructed, it's this idea that there is knowledge which is probably going to take a little time to unravel. There's knowledge which is going to take a little time to gain or grasp. And Paul says, I've come to that understanding. I've come to the understanding, going back to what we were saying just a few moments ago, that God's ways, God's thoughts are not my thoughts. Now our thoughts might be, and I think in most cases, especially in the younger years, when it comes to being a Christian, if I'm a follower of Christ, he has all power, all authority, and he can, do all these great things, and what's my life going to be like? I'm going to be happy, I'm going to be wealthy, I'm going to have the best life in the world when it comes to secular things. Isn't that the thinking of a lot of people? Yes. Well, Paul, as he looks at his life, he says, that's not my state. He said, in whatsoever state I am. What does that word whatsoever imply? Paul was in a variety of states. Some good, not so good. And you see that as he wrote to the Corinthians in the 2 Corinthian letter. He said sometimes things were great and sometimes things were very bad. But whatever that state was, he says, I've learned to be content. Do you think he was always really pleased with the state he was in? No. You're out there on a shipwreck ship. The water's cold. Maybe a danger of sharks. Maybe something swimming in the water that's nibbling at your toes. I doubt that anybody in that set of circumstances is going to say, oh great, this is just what I was hoping for today. We're not going to get supper tonight. Here we are, the wind's whipping up, and we've got some waves, and we're being smacked around as we try to hold on to one of the boards from the ship. That's not fun. Paul didn't say, I'm happy in every state. He says, I've learned to be content, because I know the God I serve is going to see me through, whether the times are difficult or whether they're hard. And that's what he goes on to say. There are times where I've been abased. I've been mistreated. Sometimes he had bad things said about him. Sometimes there were some people who failed to do some good things. And then there were some times where he was around some people that were really fine people. There were some things which went also really well for him. And yet he said, I know how to be full and hungry. And he'd certainly experienced both, how to abound, how to suffer need. And then he said, whatever the circumstances, however things are going, he said, Christ strengthens me and I'm able to do all things. Now, I want to think about that. That is a very, very uncharacteristic mindset when we come to our society. When you look at people today, in contrast to this, what do you find typically in the world? Are people content? You find a woman, I'm going to start out with ladies, but you can pick on the men too. You find a lady just thinking about secular things and she's got curly hair. What's she thinking? Maybe. I'd like straight. My hair is long, I'd sure like it to be short. I wear glasses, but I'd sure like contacts. I mean, you can pick out all kinds of things in the world, and people are generally not content. When you think about this from another perspective as well, the military is what comes to my mind. And not just the military, but I'm thinking about the military in some specialized divisions. There's been, with Osama bin Laden and some other things, there's been some attention on the SEAL teams, the special forces, and so forth. If you're in one of those groups, what do you think your life is like some days?
Face-to-face with death.
All right, you're living face-to-face with death, and as you're out there in that potentially deadly circumstance, where might you be? Think you might be out in the bush? Poisonous snakes? Night? Cold? Rain? Sleet? Hail? Booby traps? What else? Fear? And yet, do you get the sense that those guys are content? I do. You know, we've made our bed. We've made our choice. We're committed to this mission, and it's not always fun, but we're going to be satisfied. You know, we can't run down to the burger joint and get something to eat. There are going to be some meals that we miss. But this is important to us. This is what we've dedicated our lives to. Well, if people can do that in the secular realm for something that is a temporary goal and maybe a noteworthy goal, what about in the spiritual realm? I've learned to be content. Do you think we could take that message and apply it to a local congregation? You think there's some people who say, well, I'm not happy with my local church? Well, I think anybody could say that. You know, there's some things that we might not like about a local congregation. But still, isn't it possible to be content? It should be. What about our family? There's some things I don't like about my kids. Some things I don't like about my husband. Some things I don't like about my wife. Some things I don't like about my in-laws. Well, all those things might be true. But can we learn to be content? We can. So when we think about this, God has those characteristics to see us through the difficult times, whatever the state is. Additional thoughts that you want to make before we pick up on the next passage?
Wait. King James mentions, I am instructed both to be full and hungry. The New American Standard says, I have learned the secret of being filled and hungry.
And there again, you get back to that idea that I was talking about. It's that word that was sometimes used for mysterious knowledge. There's that secret. There is finally that understanding. You know, the light bulb has finally come on. And that's true for us. I mean, and the SEALs get that in that military sense. And Paul says you need that in the spiritual sense. And if people will get that, it'll change your life. It'll change your congregation. It'll change your family. But a lot of people just, like I said, they're never content. You know, whatever they have, this looks better, or this looks more attractive, or they feel like they've got to try this. But that is one of the greatest secrets to life. But many people just refuse to get it. So, thanks for that additional note. Anybody else? Okay. He says there are several cases in the Bible in which people desire death for one reason or another. They certainly were not content. To saints like Paul, it would mean the end of all the hardships and abuses by the enemies of the cross of Christ. Others had noble reasons, some not so noble. Simeon, he's a fellow that we find back there in Luke chapter 2, verses 29 to 32. Somebody want to head over there and take care of that for us in just a moment. Luke 2, 29 to 32. Brent? Talked about the fact that he had that desire to still be alive when the Lord Jesus came, and he was told by the Holy Spirit that that desire would be fulfilled. So he sees Jesus, Joseph, and Mary, bring him to the temple, and here's what we find. Luke 2, 29-32.
Lord, now lest thou with thy servant depart in peace according to thy word, for mine eyes have seen thy salvation, which thou hast prepared before the face of all people, the light to lighten the Gentiles and the glory of thy people Israel.
Okay, thank you. Let's fill in our blanks. He says, mine eyes have seen thy salvation. You've given light. And that's to lighten the Gentiles. And there's also the, what, for the people of Israel. There's the glory. He knew, at least had some comprehension of Jesus, what he was going to do. And when the Lord, even at that very young age, was brought into a state, he was absolutely thrilled. And then we have this statement in Luke 10, verse 24, which is really a remarkable point when we consider it in our day and time. He said, for I tell you that many who? Prophets and kings have desired to see those things which ye see and have not seen them, and to hear those things which ye hear and have not heard them. I'm going to put this in some pretty stark terms, and I'm not necessarily talking about me as a Bible class teacher, but when you think about Luke 10, verse 24, prior to the coming of Christ, there would have been people who would have literally given their right arm and their left eye to be able to come to an assembly such as this, talk about Christ, and have a Bible in their possession. I mean, the Lord said something good was coming, and this is it. I mean, we're on this side of the great blessing. And Jesus said not just anybody look for that kind of opportunity, but who was interested? There were kings and there were prophets. Now, can you imagine that? Two very drastic different groups of people. The king, of course. I mean, what kind of information is the king going to be interested in? Well, you know, not just chit-chat, not just idle gossip. I mean, he's interested in what's really great, what's really significant. I want the secret stuff. You know, give me the best news you've got. So when we think about what we have access to when it comes to the spiritual realm, Jesus said there were kings in the past that were looking forward to this kind of insight. And then, in addition to the kings, who else were there? There were the prophets. Well, you would think a prophet of God, I mean, what else could he want? Those prophets wanted some information about the New Testament, and they didn't get it. But the Lord said that we are on this side of the cross, and we have that information. When we take that information, when we couple it with what we know about God, it really should be a great, great encouragement to us. It should allow us to have Philippians 4:11-13, that secret knowledge, if you will, that understanding which allows us to be content in all things. But America, the country that we live in, by its nature, it's almost a land which encourages us not to be content. On every hand, we're encouraged, get more, get better, you know, those kinds of things, never be satisfied, keep moving forward. But that's really the opposite of what we find when it comes to God in the New Testament. Additional thoughts? Okay. Let's take a look at Jacob and the information about Joseph. He notes there was a long separation that caused Jacob a lot of grief. Of course, Dad thought that Joseph had been killed and there obviously would be no hope of a reunion. Back there in Genesis chapter 46 and Genesis chapter 47, towards the end of Genesis, we have some information about the fact that Dad did learn that his son was alive. Joseph was not killed. He, of course, had been put in the pit for a while and then sold to the traders, and then eventually ended up in Egypt, and then finally made his way to where he was just under Pharaoh. Genesis 46, verse 30. Who's got that and is willing to read it? Genesis 46, 30. And then we'll also ask you to read from Genesis chapter 47, verse 28 a minute later. Anybody? Genesis 46. Verse 30? Okay.
Israel said to Joseph, now let me die, since I have seen your face and know that you are still alive.
Okay. Let's fill in our blank. Now let me what?
Die.
All right. Now, remember, he's in the area of Goshen. At this time, that was where the descendants went. Should be an easy place for us to remember. And he's thinking, okay, you know, everything is over. You know, this is all that I want to do, but God had some other plans. It once again goes back to what we talked about before. Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9. God said, your thoughts are not my thoughts. My ways are not your ways. Sometimes in the younger years, a person will look at his life and think, well, I'm 17, I'm 18, and what's ahead of me? Long life. I've got many years, many good years. This night is thy soul required of thee. Somebody else reaches the age of 75 and they're kind of looking at the clock and what are they thinking? Time to check out. And then what happens? They pick up a second job. They end up with a third career. And they live to the age of 102. So life is a very uncertain thing. And that's one more reason why we need that state of contentment. Then in Genesis 47, verse 28, Sherman, if you'll flip across the page or the screen there, whatever you have.
And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the days of Jacob, the years of his life, were 147.
Okay, so he's, again, a good example. He's thinking, okay, you know, I've had a chance to see my son. There is this reunion. He is alive. And now I'm ready to check out. And yet God allowed him to live for how many more years? 17 more years. We really do not know. So that, I think, brings to mind a lot of the lessons that Jesus talked about. He said, sufficient are the troubles of today. As he was dealing with the Sermon on the Mount, we really don't know what's going to happen from day to day. And many of the assumptions that we make, they are not good assumptions. So trust in God, learn to be content, and trust in those qualities that he has. Any thoughts that you have before we figure out what to do with the next one? Stop here, go on. Nobody? Well, let's at least pick up with 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 4. This is going back to the reference about Elijah. He's a man who at this point is very, very discouraged. The writer says that he walked through the valley of the shadow of death, and he definitely spent some time down there. He's at a point where he's just, you know, kind of like Nineveh and Jonah. God, I want to die. There is just, you know, no reason to go on here. He is fleeing from Jezebel. He's under the juniper tree. He's thinking about his life. 1 Kings chapter 19. Let's look at verses 4, 5, 6, and 7. Anybody have that and willing to read it? Okay, Doug. 1 Kings 19, 4, 5, 6, and 7.
But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a juniper tree and requested for himself that he might die and said, it is enough now, O Jehovah, take away my life, for I am not better than my fathers. And he lay down and slept under a juniper tree, and behold, an angel touched him and said unto him, arise and eat. And he took, and behold, there was at his head a cake baked on the coals and a cruse of water. And he did eat and drink, and laid him down again. And then the angel of Jehovah came again the second time and touched him and said, arise and eat, because the journey is too great for thee. And he rose and did eat and drink, and went in the strength of that food 40 days and 3 nights, and the hair of the mouth of God.
Okay, now this is a nice way to sum things up. Here's the prophet. His mindset is, life is over. You know, you got Jezebel, she's the one that has the power, and there is really no hope. I'm going to come here, die, goes to sleep. Well, maybe he was hoping that that sleep would end his death. A lot of people would like to die in the sleep. That's not what happens. He's brought back to an awakened state, and what's he do? He begins to, he has a meal. He eats. All right, and then what's he do after he eats? He goes back to sleep. And again, you have to wonder a little bit. Maybe he's thinking, well, okay, belly's full. Now God will take me. Now God will kill me. But that doesn't work out that way. He gets plenty of food, and the angel actually has him eat a little bit more because he says, hey, buddy, where are you headed? On a trip, right? You're going to take a long, long trip. The trip's going to require more than a month. And God's message to him was, I have plans for you. And that is exactly right. It is not a man that walks to direct his steps. And that is another lesson that is so hard for a lot of people to get through their minds. James had to deal with this too. Remember, James talked about, we're going to go where? Into this city. And we're going to spend how long there? We're going to spend, you know, in excess of a year. And we're going to buy. We're going to sell. And we're going to get gain. James says, you don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. So you be content with today. Those are tough, tough lessons to instill into the minds of people, even in the later years of Christianity. But they are needed lessons. And they can be lessons that we apply if we'll trust in the power of God that we've already